Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery with you, and it's a very important day in the world of FX PhD. Happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you very much. Didn't know you were going to lead with that, but okay. Thanks.
It's big news. Big news when it comes around.
Right.
Very. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks. I much appreciate it. Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
The Twitterverse and Facebook is alive with chatter related to your birthday. But anyway, hey guys, welcome. Hardly. Welcome to This Week. We've been insanely busy, both in Sydney as well as here in the States. So we're sorry about the bit of delay and not having a podcast out for the last several weeks. But frankly, it's been a case of just hitting the ground running with a new term. Getting stuff done, and we really do take the podcast seriously, so we're happy to be back.
Yes, yes, it has been busy. Lots of traveling, lots of doing stuff.
Yes, you were, Mike was out here doing some stuff. You're getting ready to head over to FMX as well, but it is the third week now in the term. So Mike, we didn't actually talk about this beforehand, but I think maybe we could quickly go through some of the courses and just give some really quick bullet points about some of the cool things that we have going on this term. And, well, I thought maybe since it's your birthday, you'd like to start.
Yeah, well, I've been really focused on the VR course. Obviously, I'm doing background fundamentals as well, and we're having a lot of fun with background fundamentals. And certainly, it's one of the highlights. I just so love doing background for its ability to cover general topics. But in a couple of earlier background fundamentals, we touched on VR, and we've been tracking VR as it builds. And so obviously in this term, we've got an entire course devoted to it. It is a 100-level course, so we're not going to, you know, teach you in this 100-level course how to program a high-end 3D gaming engine to achieve, you know, top-of-the-line high-end renders. That is actually really hard work. But what we are going to do is give you a really good rundown on what all the sort of key technologies are from the high-end to the low-end. So at the high-end, we're going to flag, and I've already flagged in some of the classes that are already out, you know, what the sort of current sort of coal faces at the sort of the most cutting edge. And then we're going to be also doing work where we, you know, look at a more achievable solution that you can get involved with yourself, which actually tends to revolve around filming and producing stuff that plays back probably on a mobile device. And the reason for this is, as those of you would know from the articles we've published, in fact, Oculus Rift has yet to ship a product. It's shipping its developer kits, but it's not actually shipping headsets other than its relationship with Samsung and the Gear VR, which is to say a mobile phone in a headgear. And that has sort of really taken the VR community by storm. It's a really good platform upon which to be able to produce stuff, because playing back VR material that you've actually filmed has turned out to be remarkably more engaging and achievable than certainly a desirable thing, but very hard thing, which is high-end gaming programming to hit very, very high data rates that the interactive systems need. But I guess the other thing, John, is those high-end systems, as we saw from, like, say, the Weta example at GDC, require top-of-the-line graphics cards and really grunty PCs.
Yeah, they certainly do. It's the kind of thing that you'd basically be constrained to the graphics card in a workstation-type graphics card to get the kind of data rates that you need, as especially with some of the newer headsets coming out. And as you point out, though, those headsets aren't even out yet or coming out yet. So that's where the Gear VR is interesting. There's a new Gear VR coming out for the new S6 by the end of the month, probably by the end of April. And actually, cardboard is really a very interesting thing as well, because it's quite inexpensive, the Google Cardboard, and it works somewhat cross-platform. There's more stuff going on for Android than there is for the Apple iPhone, but that makes it incredibly approachable to have, because people have already made that investment in their phone, and now they have to make an even less of an investment compared to the Gear VR through Cardboard. So that's an interesting one as well. In fact, I think from NAB, Murata did a presentation during the Foundry's live event about a project they did for Google and Google Cardboard, and we're actually going to have a story about that coming up in a couple weeks as part of FX Guide, as well as folding into the VR course as part of FX PhD.
Yeah, so the VR stuff is really interesting. And I've got to say, John, we've had a lot of interest from people wanting to do this course. In fact, I've had visual effects supervisors contact me saying, hey, I see you're doing a VR course. I'd really like to do that just to sort of find out what the key pressure points are. So I think this is a really good idea, this 100-level course. But also, I think if we tried pulling off a 200 or 300-level course right now, it would become redundant before we even got the classes out because it's a rapidly changing area. It feels like it will soon start to, you know, have what I'd call sort of more obvious sort of agreed upon workflows, but that isn't quite there yet. It's really I think you described it as a Wild West.
John Waddleton actually also used that term as well as part of his presentation. I hate using that term, but it does at least convey that here in the States, where we're familiar with that term. You have a Wild East. No, you have a Wild West. You're in the crazy sort of East. So, but
yeah,
it really is. And it does change dramatically. And, you know, maybe we can dive in more into some of the stuff I saw at NAB later in the DOD about some of that stuff, because it is so rapidly changing. But I'd like to talk about a course that has really gotten really great take up so far this term. Surprising. I mean, I'm not surprised that the course is popular, but I'm surprised it is the most popular so far, and that's the New Compositing Best Practices by Victor Perez. I think those of you who have taken Victor's courses in the past know that he does a really high quality, high level of preparation and presentation. He teaches a lot as well as does production work, so he's a really great mix, just like many of our profs at FX PhD, most of our profs, I should say, all of our profs. But he does do more teaching than many, actually. And I think what's great about this course, Mike, is it's the kind of stuff that you literally can apply daily on the job. You know, it's not necessarily as niche as the virtual reality course where we're still on the bleeding edge. It's not necessarily like some of the Houdini destruction and rendering course, which is very specific. But for those of you who are compositors, the takeaway from this course is really going to be stuff that you can use daily on your job. Now, I think that's why people are really enjoying and hooking up with this course. Basically, how you can work more efficiently, more productive, and make the most of the tools that are there. And I mean, I think those are some of the great things that you can learn from others in taking these courses at FX PhD. So that's why I want to start with that one.
Yeah. You know, just because we're going to be bouncing around a bit, you know how great GDC was this year and GTC. So I've been doing a stuff for FX Guide on an upcoming story we're going to put out on the Unreal 4 demo that they had at GDC, which was on the kite. So this was the real-time environment where there's basically like a Pixar-level little short film of the guy in a kite. You might have seen it floating around because it's attracted a lot of attention because of the tech that's in it. And Unreal deliberately didn't do shoot 'em up robot, you know, warfare-y kind of thing. And I've just been loving it, just going deep in with the guys at Unreal. They've been incredibly generous coming out of their East Coast office. I mean, we think of when you're talking about East Coast. Really, really good on the phone, just explaining everything, giving us all the assets we could possibly want. So we actually have a second Unreal Engine course this term, which John's doing, which is production in Unreal 4. It's not related to the kite project, but I'm just saying, like, it's just great how all these things are crossover and intersect. Like, I'm really keen for us to be able to do more stuff with game engines, because if you look at kite as an example of what can be done, not only is this an astonishing piece of like animation, the technical rendering quality of it's really great, from subsurface scattering to backlight scattering through leaves to just amazing looking visuals and AI deer, which, by the way, is really funny because they set up these AI deer and they'd fly around the corner and they wouldn't know where the deer were because they'd all just wandered off or gotten a clump or, you know, done something. They had to actually sort of un-AI them a bit so they could art direct them so that the deer just wouldn't sort of roll off. But anyway, in that giant kite environment, which is like 100 square miles of fully rendered, fully 3D populated terrain, you can just go anywhere at any time of night or day. So that's remarkable. The fact that it's real time is remarkable. But the other thing that I discovered when I was talking to the guys on the East Coast is they put the whole thing together in 6 weeks. I think it's just astounding. 6 weeks to put that together. And that included going, hey, we're going to go and film in Scotland to get some textures. Phoning up the Scotland guys at Epic, who said, yeah, Scotland's kind of in the middle of winter right now, guys. It's only like 5 hours of daylight. And most of that's raining. And them going, right. So then they jumped on a plane and flew to New Zealand. So the Scotland in that kite thing is actually from textures gathered in New Zealand, which, you know, is a good double for a summery Scotland. Scott and Zealand, I think, is what they ended up calling the place. But yeah, so anyway, that production in Unreal 4 engine course is really, really interesting. And if you haven't been watching what's happening in the gaming engines, because, you know, let's face it, a few years ago it was fairly inferior, you really need to give it a second look, because game engines are increasingly becoming a very key part of the overall toolbox of what we can do and use. And we're very keen to have more of these game engine courses at PhD.
Yeah, I saw that at the GTC. Throw another conference in the mix there. That's with the NVIDIA one. And they showed that in the opening on this big, you know, 18, 24 foot tall projection screen, and it's so amazing. You look at that and you go, wow, how are they doing that now with the limited stuff that they have available in the limited processing power they have available in the GPU? Well, they have way more now, among other things, but it's just really brilliant if you haven't checked that out. So find that online, check it out. It's a gorgeous demo piece and proof of Unreal in application. It's just amazing. Next course I want to talk about is one that I've been working on getting together for 18 months, I think. It was based upon a suggestion from one of our members in the forums, and I kept telling him, look, we really are wanting to do this. We're waiting to get all these artists together. They're working on a little bit of a time to get it together, and that's the Tornado Destruction Project. And this is actually part one of two courses, because there's so much that people wanted to have as part of this course. But the idea is, in the past at FXPhDs, we've really focused on specialization in the various disciplines, things like the digital map painting courses that Ludo's been doing, very specifically digital map paintings, and then prep them in a 3D environment and get those ready to hand off to compositing and lighting and so forth to be finished. Similarly with Houdini effects, we've had some Houdini effects courses in the past that have just concentrated on the effects standpoint and not the rendering, because typically many of the people who are working in Houdini are there doing effects and don't have necessarily the skills to do lighting and rendering. So similarly, our compositing course has been much the same way, but we got a lot of call in the forums from people who are maybe not at, really large facilities, more at the medium to small size facilities where people have to wear multiple hats to tackle a project. And that's where this comes in. And it's really working through an entire shot and taking to the level that is really production quality finished at a high level. We've got an amazing lineup of pros teaching this term and will next term as well. On the course information page, we have links to their IMDb profiles for all of them. But people who basically concentrate on these various skills as part of their job at, I think all these guys are at DNAG right now. But from camera tracking to modeling of the elements, texturing, look developments, and then the aforementioned effects. This is basically going to take a plate that we shot in Mexico with one of our FXPhD members and longtime friends, and is going to be working through the shot of adding a tornado, or I guess cyclone. No, cyclone is a hurricane. Do you have a different name for a tornado?
We don't have tornadoes, but okay. I basically just experienced a cyclone virtually in Sydney, but that's another story. But yes, sorry. Office underwater.
Yeah.
But yes, go on.
A twister, as in the movie Twister.
Much looks like a shot from Twister, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's shots in Twister. There's actually some shots on the, I was watching in the Foundry demo reel, the new client reel that they debuted at NAB this year, that are shots that are similar in nature, I guess. One was a helicopter shot with some behind-the-scenes stuff. The idea behind this is actually starting from scratch with a clean plate, doing some cool things with Google mapping and Google layout to actually get the match the scene from the actual location where this was shot down in Mexico, which I think is pretty cool. I don't think we've done that before as part of the courses, and then building that shout out to actually get to really high level. And I think it's really going to be fantastic. We really want to thank also Ludo for helping us with this course. He's helping us, he's serving as effectively VFX supervisor for the course, and is helping us line up all the various profs, make sure they're available to do the course and so forth, working over the duration, over actually two terms. If you're unable for some reason to take the course next term, do understand that this is going to be a complete course, so to speak, from the standpoint in the last three classes are actually dealing with tornado effects. So we're not going to actually just cut off the effects right in the middle of it and use this cliffhanger to get you joined next term. We aren't going to finish up with the final compositing rendering, of course, but they will be kind of complete sections of the course, and you won't be left hanging for that like final single class that you needed to actually do the tornado effects as part of the course. So I'm really proud. I know both Mike and I are really proud of being able to bring this course to you guys, because it has been quite a bit of effort and a bit of a long haul in getting it as part of the curriculum, and I think well worth the wait.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of good courses this term. I know we sort of, you know, normally do that whole course when we go through, but I was thinking when you were talking before about the Nuke course, mm-hmm. That obviously there's also the 3D techniques for Nuke compositors, and in addition to that compositing course, there's also the Flame course, CG integrated techniques in Flame, both of which are 200 level courses. Well, in fact, all three of those two Nuke courses and the Flame course are all 200 level courses, and certainly the 200 level courses are the most popular. But we do like having the 300 as in the tornado, and we do like having the 100 as in the VR to try and, you know, and this, we're only talking about the new courses, of course.
Right.
Hundreds of bloody courses in the darn thing. I think actually you worked out the other day, didn't you, John, how many courses we've ever had, wasn't it? Is that right?
I don't remember.
What? 487 courses or something.
Yes.
Yeah, which, you know, basically means 4,800 classes on visual effects. So it's probably not. It's not, you know, it's the 10,000 hour rule about, you know, being able to really be expert at something in at a professional super level. It's, yeah, we've definitely kicking it. Hey, do you want to discuss the Cinema 4D stuff and After Effects?
Yeah, it's actually really great. I'm really happy. I met Emmett. He was actually... had the name passed on to us from Lloyd Alvarez, who, those of you who know After Effects world, know him from AE Scripts, as well as courses that he's taught at FXPHD in the past for us. And we're always in search of having great profs, and really happy to meet Emmett when he's out here. He's based on the East Coast, but's been out in LA for the last several months working as a freelance artist. And I think what's cool about this course is it's a bit different in the past, where we haven't done many courses where we've really started out kind of designing from scratch the way you would with a client. You know, let's say a client comes to you generally and will ask you to do some boards to help them develop an idea. Sometimes ad agencies will, of course, bring boards to you with ideas, but in general, they expect you to come up and have some kind of treatment and boards. And I think what's an interesting aspect of this course is actually how can you take that work that you do in the boards and actually not lose all of it by the time you actually start working on your project. I guess you could kind of think of it as semi a bit of a parallel between doing some rough previs and not being able to use that actually in your final work. Well, the idea behind this, at least in the first part of the course, is to talk about really good best practices for actually working on design and storyboard frames, and then taking those and being able to actually work them in and use them for your final comp and use them for your final project, so that time that you invested early on isn't lost. When you're building on. And I think if you look at the preview video that Emmett did, you can see that some of the imagery is really beautiful. I think he has a really nice eye, really nice mix of some color grading, 3D elements, and actually some storytelling within his motion graphics that I think were going to be really great. It's been a couple terms since we had our last After Effects course, and really happy to have one back again. And we'll be building on it more in the future, I can say.
Yes. I actually got to hang out on my last trip to America, which I don't remember what that was for, but it was I was in America, right? Oh, yeah, I remember now. Okay, so my last trip to America, which was like about a week or two ago, I got to hang out at the Moto offices with the Moto guys, which was really cool. So I did a brief thing sort of teasing some of the stuff that's coming up in Moto in the new version. And we have a Moto course that Pat's running this term. Pat's terrific at Moto. It's a 200-level course on intermediate modeling and texturing. But I've got to say, John, I really enjoyed visiting the foundry offices in LA, albeit that the poor bastards are really constrained on parking. But it was super fun. They totally opened up the kimono, as it was, and we got to discuss complicated tech stuff that's coming out. There is more stuff obviously coming from Moto in terms of releases, because they teased it and we put it up in our FX guide story. But Moto is a marvelous product because it's got a really good handle on the stuff that it's doing, and it's got a really good insight into the design and product design world. But they're just bright guys. They're really friendly, and since they integrated with the foundry, they've got, you know, some more resources. Some I mean, it's just not one of those things that's withering or stuck over in the corner. It's the exact opposite. It's really flourishing now it's got the foundry in sync with it, and that means a lot to me, because I think there are a number of companies in different areas. A good one would be the guys at do V-Ray, you know, that have really come through solely. Mm-hmm. And I mention them because now you can get Moto to, like, as a plug-in for V-Ray in Moto. But, you know, they're just really good people. Similarly, like the RenderMan teams, like, we're doing stuff with them at the moment. And we have RenderMan courses that we're running. So if you are, in fact, part of the sort of 3D community and you've embraced the fact that RenderMan is now free, in the courses, that obviously they're not new this term, but we have our RenderMan courses, and I'm going to be doing a story on that RenderMan take up and how well that's going as well over on FX Guide, talking to some of our profs and discussing what they're really enjoying in RenderMan. But it's just good communities and good people, and I think increasingly it's so important that those communities and the people that you're dealing with are people that you can, you know, talk with, understand mm-hmm. their roadmaps and work. It's like a collaborative thing moving forward. So enjoyed that. I always enjoy Pat's courses. He's another one of these people, John, that's just very good at teaching.
Yeah, he really is. And just a sideline, I know you touched on it as well, but I've also really been impressed with the kind of speed, I guess you could say, in which Nuke and Moto are really starting to work together. Mm-hmm. We know it's not easy to do. I mean, if you look at a company like Autodesk and Tuflove coming up here, I think it's actually stunning that we haven't seen tighter integration between Flame and Maya and or Max at this point. And it seems like the Foundry is doing a really effective job. I mean, it's not perfect. It's new, and they're adding more things. But you can really see that. I think that they're taking that integration seriously.
And also Mari. To tell you the truth.
Yeah, exactly. That's an excellent point. And I don't think Autodesk isn't taking it seriously, but I just frankly think they haven't. It's been how many years since the acquisition, and it's the integration I would have expected to be much further between their flagship compositing product and their 3D line. It just seems to me Foundry, maybe because their size, are more nimble and able to do it a bit faster, but they're a large company now. So that's the other reason we have that 3D techniques for new compositors going hand in hand, because we like having a couple courses together that people might be interested in taking. So if you're a compositor, want to learn a bit of Moto and vice versa, I think those two make a good pair. You mentioned cool rendering techniques. There's really a great follow-up course to our destruction in Houdini course last term, being taught by Liam Whitehouse, and it's taking it to the next level with the rendering, simply because we got so many requests for that in our forums. And as I mentioned previously, generally you've kind of stuck to kind of doing the effects and then doing separate rendering classes. But we thought for this one, because of Liam's skills and his work in the industry, he's a great guy to actually tackle the second part of that, which is actually ending up lighting and rendering the destruction scene that he made in the previous Houdini 213 course that ran first in the January term, but is also running this term as well. And of course, as Mike, you mentioned earlier, some of the stuff that we have on the VPN on offer, he's going to be utilizing RenderMan for his final render in that course. So it's a great, again, kind of nice relationship with all the other courses we have at FXPhD, bringing this, and as well as the VPN software that you can use. And of course, now you can actually use RenderMan on your own without the VPN.
Yeah, it's great, RenderMan. I mean, it's really interesting as I've been probing into it, some of the subtle stuff that we're now kind of appreciating more. And I'm really looking forward to writing this up because it's great hearing from the people like Liam, you know, about what they're using and how they're using it. And RenderMan is a very powerful piece of software, and it's really opening itself up now to much wider community adoption.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant move on their part.
Hey, we're going to discuss NAB, and I'm worried we're going to run out of time if we do. So we'll just finish up our course listing, but I do want to hit you up for some goss from yep. Vegas. But I don't think we've mentioned our digital matte painting.
Ludo's?
Yeah.
No, Ludo's course. And again, Ludo, those of you at FXSpace, you know, he's been really great in helping us with our digital matte painting curriculum at FXSpace. As I mentioned earlier, he's helping us serve as VFX supervisor on that effects shop because I believe he's actually expanding his role in his day job as well, which is really cool. But he's stuck in the past to land-based and earth-based matte painting. But hey, if we're in visual effects, chances are at some point you're going to have to do something dealing with outer space. I don't care what area that you're dealing with in visual effects or even motion graphics, frankly. You're probably going to have to tackle that at some point. And so we're really excited to have this mix, add this to the mix, dealing with a cool galaxy shot in outer space. It's similar to the other courses that he's done in the past where we hope that they'll be very interactive in nature. In other words, he'll work through the brief and so forth, and you guys can actually pitch in, post your images in the forum, and he can provide feedback. He, like all of our profs, really interested in talking to you guys and interacting with you in the forums. In fact, that's one reason these guys actually like teaching at FXPhD as opposed to doing things in other places, because they do have that contact with the members who are actually taking their classes. It's actually incredibly hard, I find it at least, harder to do screen capture tutorials than in-person training, because you don't have that vibe.
Yeah.
You don't get that kind of feedback from the people who are watching you train, their looks in their eyes, their looks of confusion, their nodding of agreement, things like that. And our forums actually, while not the same, serve that purpose in our FXPhD architecture, I guess you could say. So that's an outstanding aspect of the course, the forums and the feedback that you can get. Having someone at his level to critique your matte painting, it's incredibly valuable. And we say that every term. We try and probably actually say that almost every podcast. But I hope you take advantage of that opportunity if you're taking this course or any other course at FXPhD. So, yes, that rounds out our look at the
new courses.
New courses this term. As Mike mentioned, we have a ton of others. We don't have all 400 courses on offer, but we do have well over 100 that are current at our current quality levels that we like having running. And I'm sure there's something there for everyone.
So,
gossip.
You had obviously a bunch of stuff that you're doing at NAB, and we really appreciate the stuff that you are doing that will be coming out in things like the VR course. But what was the vibe like this year?
It was actually a really good vibe at NAB. I think it was really strong. People were upbeat. Lots of really great stuff going on at the show. People really excited about it. And yes, so much of it actually relates, so much of what I did at NAB actually relates to our curriculum at FXPhD. And I think one of the interesting stops I made, Mike, was actually at the Blackmagic booth. I caught up with a couple people. First of all, our friend Steve Roberts, of course, from Ion Days and now in Blackmagic. He's loving actually being part of Blackmagic. From his standpoint, he's got a wealth of people helping him with things like the programming and so forth, and really streamlining their workflow to kind of match what they're doing with Resolve, but also kind of relieving him of that aspects he didn't like, which is actually running a company. You know, he feels like he's able to actually focus on the things that he really likes, reminding of him why those guys first started building Fusion, and that's creating a great tool. And it was nice to see it running so quickly on OS 10. At the show, which is what they were showing. Actually, didn't they release that on April 1st? Didn't they? I think they released a video. wasn't it on the 1st? Everyone thought it might be a joke, but no, it's no joke. So that's interesting. But I think I told you what was interesting to me about their announcement was not the OS 10 support, but the Linux support in the product.
Yeah.
You know, because as of right now, Fusion is a Windows-only product. And to me, if you're going to make a Linux version of a product, that basically shows you're committed to the professional side of things.
Yep.
I just don't see that adoption. I don't see many everyday users, the Creative Cloud users, or, you know, frankly, even the hundreds of thousands of people using Resolve now, they don't use it on Linux, but there are key critical people who do. And so I think it's a really strong signal that they're actually side by side with their OS X development, developing the Linux version as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Linux is what, you know, most professional outfits want to run with. I mean, I think Fusion to a certain extent does also appeal to the more indie, because I think to a certain extent where the Foundry has real strength is in a pipeline. Like that's, they understand pipelines. They have a lot of, you know, play well with others kind of thing. And not that there's anything wrong with Fusion or anything, but I just feel like that Fusion has always appealed a bit to the maverick, to the indie, to the strong, talented but multi-talented individual. And I don't normally come across Fusion in major feature film pipelines. I come across it when I'm doing stuff for FX Guide much more in kind of, you know, the work's good, but it's just not the sort of big effects housey kind of pipelines, which we would typically think of if we thought of like a high-end Nuke project.
Yeah, very true. Interesting standpoint. And I think the cameras that they introduced are quite interesting as well from a hardware standpoint.
Absolutely. We just recorded an RC with Jason Wingrove, who obviously was there with you at NAB. And Jason named, you know, that that Ursa Light as one of his favorite cameras of the whole show. He just thought it was incredible. Really remarkable stuff from Blackmagic. Blackmagic, I would actually hesitate against. Similarly, is while it makes very professional gear, also has a bit of a maverick, independent feel to it. I mean, they love, you know, shaking up the market with lower price points and, you know, doing some really cool stuff. So, yeah, I think it's a good fit, and it's a good thing to see with the product.
Yeah, and it seems as though they've learning as all good companies do from their development experience, especially from the sensor standpoint. Obviously, they're getting a lot more out of their sensor, and I think they're starting to really apply it in smart ways. I actually think an interesting camera is the Micro Cinema camera, is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. But it's a.
I mean, the resolution is maybe a bit underwhelming with a 1080. Resolution, but that could make quite an interesting VR rig camera if you're more concerned about dynamic range potentially than resolution because they're just so darn tiny.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really, really interesting camera. It's funny because, you know, Jason's world, he just basically wants a very, very large format, wide open with about a millimeter depth of field. Which, you know, is a little less what we want, but I mean, yeah, if you could get 1.2 on a VistaVision at, that's Jason's dream thing. I think one of the things we've been spoilt with, and these cameras continue along that line, is just this incredible push into ISO that gives us so much more flexibility in terms of lighting and building that up. Anyway, we have an hour and a half of Jason and I just nitpicking over cameras, and that's happening up on the RC. Did you get to the user groups, like the Flame user groups, anything, any of the other parties?
Flame user group was great. There was a really fantastic, there's a Facebook group page called Logic, invite only for Flame users on Facebook, and it's actually effectively at this point replaced Flame News as a common point of discussion. I think we all agree that the Facebook search interface and archiving of previous messages sucks. It's horrible, in fact, but one success is that people spend a lot of time on Facebook, so there's immediacy to it, and so there's a lot of there's a big active community now that we just frankly hadn't felt on Flame News. So I think that's a good thing. It's a win compared to whatever
and
selling your soul to Facebook, I guess. So then we had a great meetup on Monday night at the Cosmopolitan. Fantastic.
And at that they discussed One Frame of White?
Yeah, there's a new One Frame of White competition, and there's a cash prize this year as well for it. Yeah. You know, we're just happy to do it back in the day for the
we invented it.
Acclaim and acclaim and joy of recognition from our peers. But yes, there's apparently a cash prize as well as a lot of gear.
Well, including a term at FX PhD as a prize.
Yeah, yeah, $1,000 cash, Intuos Pro, and a membership at FX PhD. So it was cool to see that. And there's so many more built-in tools now within flame that, frankly, these kids nowadays have it easy.
Well, I remember inventing one frame of white, and we ran the first one way back in the day. So it's only fitting that you and Jeff, I believe, are both judges on the panel.
Yeah, it's a really great idea, and I'm glad to see that they took that over, and happy to carry it on for the. They called it their second annual One Frame of White, but yes, as you point out, one could conceivably call it the third annual. But it's not really annual. It was a 15-year gap between the first and the second one.
I will say, though, last year's One Frame of White's produced some really gorgeous results.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah.
It's good. They're hoping to get more entries, convince people to do it ahead of time, because I think most people...
I'd love to see some PhD members get in there.
Procrastinator. Yeah, it'd be fantastic. To see
$1,000, you know, win a whole bunch of stuff.
Cold, yeah, hard
get
cash.
A tablet. Yeah. Okay. So what were you gonna say?
What was Jason's favorite camera gear at the show? I know you're gonna talk about that in the RC, but it is an hour and a half, but just from his standpoint, what was his favorite thing? Was it the cool LiDAR based
Halo?
Follow focus rig, Halo. Yeah.
Yeah, that was. He has three. That was one of them. Actually, I'm not going to tell you what the third one is. You have to listen. But that's two.
Yeah,
of
do
them.
That. Yeah, exactly.
That's two of the three.
The tease. This is called a tease.
I want to say that one of the things I really enjoyed about our discussion, it's obviously Jason's a really good friend of mine, so I always enjoy talking to him. But we discussed not only big things like the new Dragon weapon camera, but little things like, you know, interesting, cool bits and bobs that he's found on the floor that are just sort of less obvious, you know, odd lights that you would just probably not even know about if he didn't flag them. And, you know, things that are useful every day that don't get the kind of publicity that some of the bigger stuff does. Because we cover, obviously, the big cameras from Canon and from Red and from Blackmagic and Sony and stuff. But also just those things like, you know, the new little monitors that are coming out, which you really need to have somebody that's seen them and held them. Unless you're at NAB, which is one of the reasons for going, of course. Unless you're at NAB, you want somebody to sort of give you like that, yeah, it's really well made, it's solid, it's it looks good. You can't sort of judge that off the net. It's a bunch of good stuff there.
Yeah, and from the standpoint, kind of first public appearance, the Adobe announced stuff the week before, as usual, but... Adobe booth as general is packed, and it's really an incredibly solid release for the entire lineup of products, with the exception maybe of SpeedGrade, which we haven't heard much about yet. But really cool new color workflows.
Can I shout out? I've got the new Lightroom because I love Lightroom, and
yep.
One of the things that I got because it came out at the same time. Is Stu Mashewitz has got a new set of presets that you can get that run in Lightroom, the new version of Lightroom. I'm going to call it Lightroom 2, but it's not Lightroom 2. It's like, whatever, 4 version LC 2015, 6, whatever it is. But anyway,
yep.
The new Lightroom, which is really, really good. So if you've not checked out Stu's presets, basically the idea of his presets, which is just sort of super cool, is... he's split them all out into things like color temperature, like exposure, like dynamic compressed range, and looks. They're not looks like, I mean, he does have a few of these, like, you know, weird and wonderful things that you hardly ever want, that it looks cool, but you'll never use, that makes it look like it's shot with a 1920s camera. I mean, they are good, and I think they have a great place on Instagram. But with my photos, what I want to do is get the picture looking good. And so what you do is you just sort of run your cursor over the preset, and it automatically and instantly sort of tints or affects the thumbnail, right? So you can just run it up and down in real time between 20 different values to get like, oh, that's the kind of color temperature I want in the thumbnail, and then apply it to your main picture. And you can do that for all of these, you know, I don't know, 30 different things that he set aside, like vignettes or whatever, skin hues. And so you can just run your thing up and down the skin hues, and it'll just show you what it's going to do to skin hues, and then you pick the one you like, and then you move on. And it's a different way of working in Lightroom. If you are used to spending a lot of time in Lightroom, because that's a fun, creative thing to do, you're just going to love these. And I just processed a whole lot of stuff over the weekend with it, like last night. Photos I took on the weekend last night. And they're really good. It's like $30 for these presets. But yeah, anyway, Stu Mashewitz.
Yeah, I live by those. Yeah, I've used them for years. It's like the really, Mike speaking, the new version. But yeah, they're really great. And he's got some other, he's got a variety of them. But I think you're speaking of the graduated presets, which I think are my personal favorites in what he's done.
Yeah.
He's also got some interesting, we use it, we do less Resolve, but we actually also use Magic Bullet Looks as well as Colorista 3 for a lot of our stuff as well. And he's actually put up some cool tutorials as well for utilizing. I learned a couple things from that. Jeff Huser and I learned a couple things from his tutorials as well.
Yeah, I've used those presets as well, but I've got to say these ones, it's like a quicker, not dirtier, but you know, like it's a super fast thing. Like if you're grading a whole lot of photos, you can just plow through quickly doing stuff to them, which is unfortunately in my world, I don't have a lot of time, even though I really enjoy that creative process of grading. And I find it fast, really fast, compared to Colorista and stuff, which is great. And I don't want to get away from it, but I'm more serious.
Yeah. One frame's a bit different than 24 frames a second, for sure. But there's some really cool stuff in the new Looks 3.0, which are film LUTs, things like that. It's not just look things like it was before in the past. So there have been some really significant advancements to that as well for moving footage. And similarly, what he did for the light. Lightroom presets. But yeah, there's another set of Lightroom presets that I used to use, but I switched over to Stu's maybe a year ago and haven't looked back and looking forward to getting the new ones. I have not gotten those yet myself. I've been too busy, but certainly looking forward because Jeff Huser was saying the same thing, Mike, the other day.
If you are like John and bought the first version, I think there's a discount for the new version that came out like yesterday, but otherwise, it's $30. Why don't you just email Stu and complain?
But yeah, I was going to say, but we were talking about the color correction tools in Premiere. Really significant release from that standpoint. So if you're not doing the stuff that's related to the plugins or Magic Bullet Looks that certainly do work in that, really significant advancements in the color workflows that are available in Premiere. They've really worked hard on actually correcting some of their things they've had in the past, all the locking to Rec. 709, things like that, and then really look to fine-tune their workflow, not necessarily between Premiere and SpeedGrade, but simply right within Premiere. I was talking to Bill Roberts at an event at NAB, and he was really, I think I bothered him every year in the interview about the releases about this, and he was happy to say, well, look what we've done with this, so that's cool. Some cool and interesting stuff as well. In After Effects, it's surprising they have a character animator they have with that actually does real-time facial tracking and so forth, utilizing the camera. It's fun, it's interesting, but what's, I think, more telling is under the hood, it seems to be they've reworked quite a bit of things from a processing pipeline in After Effects. So they've separated out the UI from the processing, and you might go, well, who cares? Doesn't impact me. Well, it does impact you, because now what you can do is previously, when you adjust a slider or adjust something within Adobe After Effects, it grinds everything to a halt. Things stop playing, the processing happens, but actually now dynamically you can have your composition playing and stuff happening while you're adjusting things and see those happen, not in real time, but happen much faster than the past. And hopefully, I think over time, what we will see is actually more and more performance coming within the compositions in After Effects now that they've kind of started to rework the stuff under the hood. And I think it's cool that they've actually done some significant investment in their infrastructure while at the same time added some creative effects on top. It hasn't been, Mike, one of those situations where they've just said, okay, this is a architectural workflow release. This is both things happening under the hood. As well, so I think that's great. So we're going to actually hopefully have some more details about that technology, some of the stuff they have in After Effects, as well as some of the new kind of optical flow technology that they have in Premiere to smooth over jump cuts within edits as well, coming up in Effects.
Oh, that is so awesome.
It's stuff that we've seen. I think I saw a paper 3 years ago at SeaGraph and talked to some of the guys about that, and it was pretty interesting. But the technology, some of the first stuff actually goes back 5 or 6 years ago when it was first introduced. And that's how long it's actually taken to go from scientific research or research, image processing research, to actually get it working in a product. But it can be quite effective. And it was that and the character animator stuff was actually shown at the Adobe Max conference that I went to last year as part of the sneaks. And I think we talked about that in the DOD back then. But quickly from the Adobe Max preview to shipping soon in a product, which I think is pretty cool.
Just FYI, you know that Avengers has opened here.
I know. You guys posting your images of going to adventures, it's makes me cry.
Sighing.
It's good. You know, I'm happy. You deserve.
Awesome.
Getting an opening. Yeah. Awesome. Is that your review? Yeah.
Yep. One word. Awesome.
Yeah.
Second review is really good character animation.
Okay.
Just saying.
I am very much looking forward to that myself. And and Star Wars trailer that made my week last week.
Yeah, but what about the one that that's for God, what's it called? Rogue One. Mental freeze out. Rogue One. And something. They put out the trailer for Rogue One, and it has this enormous Death Star shot. Well, anyway, someone on the web was criticizing it. The trailer, that is. And John Knoll himself wrote an email in explaining how they had, in fact, come up with a whole lot of logical workarounds for the cheats that allowed the Death Star to look that big in the trailer. It's just a really good read. I think it's on Ain't It Cool. And he sort of basically said that if the Death Star was that big, it would cause tidal problems and it would crash into the planet and do all these sort of things. So John Knoll wrote this long email explaining the logic of how it worked and how clearly they have very cheap anti-gravity technology because they use it everywhere. And so consequently, the Death Star itself has a giant anti-grav thing to stop it bashing into the planet. And it's just a great email. It's really worth reading if you check it out. Okay, I'm going to have to go because I've got to go to...
You said number two, but that film, it's between the first three and the second three, right?
Yeah, but it's the second film that is being announced.
Right,
yeah.
Okay, that's what confused me. Yeah.
The new,
I was thinking of it's three and a half.
Yeah, no, the next film is obviously the seventh film in the Star Wars series, but in the off years. And of course, it's an FX PhD prof who's directing it. Gareth is directing it. So that's awesome.
We just had the most ridiculous dinner conversation the other day, talking about episode two, but not being the second film. And, you know, it's just like...
But what was wrong with it?
Just the idea that in the order in which they're released, right, different from the episodes that they are, different from the stories that they are. So it's like...
I always thought that was the best thing. I swear to God.
But I mean,
God,
just having a discussion about that, and you're talking about one film, thinking they're talking about the film that was three...
Well,
later.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what I mean. It was just ridiculous.
But I remember as a kid hearing that was the plan and just thinking it was genius, because back then the idea of doing digital aging was just inconceivable, right? And so the idea that you would just naturally then have the actors at the right ages because they'd be older by the time they came to make those, I just thought was terrific. And, you know, let's face it, the thing that you liked, and I haven't even asked you this, but the thing that you liked about that Star Wars seventh film was the last shot, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's when there's a Wookiee and there's Han and they're on screen. And you're like, that's the thing. That's the thing that makes it go.
Yes.
The coolest.
Made me cry. Anyway.
In a good way.
Well, my friend, enjoy your birthday.
Thank you.
It's significant. It's good. Congratulations on making it through another year. That's what I always tell myself.
Congratulations making it around the sun again.
Yes. Exactly.
I got to the other side and back.
Everyone, thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast.
And if you want to wish me
patience,
wish me birthday wishes, I'm Mike Seymour on Twitter. And yes, I am turning 50. Thank you very much. Thanks for playing. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, guys. Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.